Welcome to Why Am I So Effing Stressed, hosted by Anne-Marie Bell, who created this podcast to share her own journey on how unmanaged chronic stress wreaked havoc with her health and life when she received an unexpected, out-of-left-field breast cancer diagnosis in 2013. Now a certified stress management coach, Anne-Marie is committed to educating and helping people better understand stress and learn healthy ways to more effectively manage it and live their best lives.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Why Am I So Effing Stressed? This is your host, Anne-Marie Bell, also known as AMB, and I first want to thank you for coming back, for returning to listen. It's been, I think, a little over 4 months since I uploaded an episode, and the fact that you have come back means so much to me. It's very heartwarming, and it has been a while since I recorded the last episode, and the reason for this is that my beautiful queen, my 89-year-old mom, was fine on March 9th, and on March 10th, she was not fine, and she called me while I was at work in the morning in a meeting and said, "Hey, can you come by after work to help me take a COVID test? I'm feeling a little short of breath," and I'm thinking, "Oh, yeah, mom, I'll wait several hours and come deal with your shortness of breath when it's convenient for me after work." Not. Of course, I excused myself from the Zoom call and drove right to her house. And when I got there, I could visibly see that her breath was really short and she was struggling to breathe. And I kind of intuitively knew it wasn't COVID. Something inside me said, not COVID. And we did the test anyway, and it was negative. So I took her to the ER, where she was admitted to the hospital with COPD and congestive heart failure. And this was the beginning of the end. She valiantly tried to make her body get better over the next several weeks, but her body would just not cooperate. And the congestive heart failure kept winning each round despite her heroic efforts. And on May 21st, she peacefully passed away into the arms of my dad, I'm sure, who has been patiently waiting for her since his own passing 6 years ago. And they were married for almost 60 years when he passed away. And the situation gave me and my siblings not a front row seat, but starting lineup positions in the experience of being a caregiver. It was exhausting and very stressful. Yet we had some of the most beautiful moments with my mom as I call her, and with each other. But it was still horrifically exhausting and stressful. And this takes a toll on the body, mind, and soul. So after a few weeks of this, I knew continuing to write and record the podcast would add more pressure and more stress to a stress cauldron that was already boiling over. So I put it aside for a bit. I followed my own advice, and I'm really glad I did. And my hat is off to people who provide caregiving on a regular basis. You need to know that you are amazing and you are a superhero. If you know a caregiver or you are receiving support from a caregiver, thank them for all they do. Maybe even send them a card or flowers or a gift card for a massage or a spa day. Something to let them know how truly valued they are. And caregivers, listen up. You absolutely need, capital N-E-E-D, underlined, highlighted in yellow, you need to set aside time for yourself each day for self-care, even if it's only 10 to 15 minutes. Every one of those minutes you invest in taking care of you will have a positive impact on your health, your well-being, and will take you out of fight or flight, sympathetic nervous system, and put you into rest and restore. Parasympathetic nervous system. caregiving is a petri dish for stress to come in and put the beat down on your immune system. So please give yourself, your body, your mind this gift. So with that, let's get into the episode. Fear. Is it our friend or is it our enemy? I think it can be both. And for this reason, I refer to fear as my frenemy. And a frenemy is someone or something that can be your friend sometimes and can also turn on you and become your enemy in 2 seconds. Fear can help and fear can hinder. And when it's hindering, which I personally believe it does much of the time we experience fear, it is like an invasive weed species that quietly overtakes our thought process while it lives deep inside our subconscious, seemingly effortlessly interfering with our ability to experience a joy-filled, healthy, happy life. But I'm getting ahead of myself, which I often do. So I'm reeling myself back in. So let's start with the definition of fear according to the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary. So fear, an unpleasant, often strong emotion caused by anticipation or awareness of danger, an anxious concern. Now, let's look at 2 key words in this definition. An unpleasant, often strong emotion caused by anticipation or awareness of danger. One scenario is anticipation, and the other scenario is awareness. Anticipation versus awareness. 2 very different words that can send our brain thoughts into very different directions. When we anticipate something, we are thinking ahead, imagining possible scenarios that could happen. When we are aware of something, that something has tangibly made itself known to us in some way, and we start to determine how we might deal with it. Both anticipation and awareness are good thought processes to engage in as we go about our day until they are not, in particular, the anticipation factor. So let's break this down some more. Fear, like ice cream, comes in a number of flavors. And we can call it fear cream. One flavor is when we anticipate or become aware of a legitimate, real, physical threat to ourselves. And we'll call this flavor, oh shit, my life's in danger. Examples would be a vicious dog is staring at us and then starts to growl and then bares its teeth menacingly. We are aware that there's a vicious dog laser locked on us. And given the growling and baring of teeth, we anticipate that that dog is going to attack us. And our fight or flight system immediately goes into action, activating the HPA axis, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, HPA, which results in our adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys, releasing cortisol, adrenaline, and norepinephrine, the stress chemicals, the stress hormones. In a real danger zone situation, like being chased by that vicious dog, this amazing process that our body executes flawlessly can help us defend ourselves from the dog, fight, or run like the wind, run like hell, away from the dog, flight. The fight or flight process, also known as the sympathetic nervous system, is a physiological response that helps us save our own asses in this type of a situation. And I encourage you to listen to episode 2 to learn more about the sympathetic fight or flight and the parasympathetic rest and digest, rest and restore of our autonomic nervous system so you can truly understand what is happening inside your body when your brain is triggered by a real or perceived, i.e. emotionally triggered, threat. In a situation where our life is threatened, fear is most definitely our friend. It helps us stay alive. Now, let's look at another flavor of fear. This flavor we'll call, I am a victim to my self-limiting and self-sabotaging fearful thoughts that prevent me from living my best life. Many of us are serving up this fear cream cone to ourselves daily and oftentimes many times during the day. It's like there's a soft serve machine that's built into our minds that our thoughts greedily pull the lever on all throughout our day. So let's demonstrate with a common experience that many of us have had. You have to give a coworker feedback, maybe, and the fear in our minds grabs a waffle large sugar cone and pulls on that lever and serves up a humongous, I am a victim to my self-limiting and self-sabotaging fearful thoughts that prevent me from living my best life portion of fear cream that tells us it's going to be a disaster because the coworker will not receive it well and it will turn into a Netflix drama series. And as our thoughts continue to slurp away at this fear cream cone, we imagine all kinds of terrible scenes where our coworker angrily leaves the conference room, slamming the door, or fires back insults at us, or stalks us on the highway and runs our car off the road. Okay, that one's not so realistic, but you get my point. And then your body is off to the fight or flight races. Amygdala, start your engines. Send the signal to the hypothalamus that there is a potential threat on the horizon. In this case, the many scenarios our brains have conjured up on how our coworker is going to react to the feedback. The hypothalamus releases corticotropin-releasing hormone, CRH. CRH stimulates the release of adrenocorticotropic hormone, ACTH, in the pituitary gland, which then sends a signal to our adrenal glands, and these are triangular-shaped glands that sit on top of each kidney, which release cortisol, adrenaline, and norepinephrine into our bodies. These three hormones essentially prepare us to defend ourselves by causing reactions in our bodies, which divert blood flow from our gastrointestinal system, our reproductive system, our kidneys and skin to our arms and legs, which are the parts of our bodies that will help us either run or fight. Blood flow is diverted to our heart and lungs, increasing our breathing and heart rate. And blood flow is also directed to the back of the brain, which is wired to help us react quickly to danger. However, this takes a blood flow away from the front of the brain, where our ability to reason and think critically and problem solve is generated. So, ever wonder why you can't think clearly when you are mentally freaking out about an emotionally driven threat? Now you know. Higher long-term cortisol levels are strongly related to having abdominal fat, abdominal obesity. Ever wonder why you have a stress belly? Now you know. When we keep thinking fear thoughts all day, self-driven fear thoughts, we keep shutting down the digestive process when we are constantly living in a state of chronic stress driven by our frenemy, fear. And this causes continuously elevated blood pressure and blood sugar levels because we are frequently giving in to our self-limiting and sabotaging fearful thoughts. It's like we are opening the doors to the brain and saying, welcome, unnecessary fearful thoughts. Mi casa es su casa. Entree. Come on in and wreak havoc with my immune system, my life, my joy. Ever wonder why your sex drive nosedives when you are constantly stressed? Now you know. The reproductive system is shut down during fight or flight. Procreating is not an action that your body feels will help save your life. When your brain thinks you are constantly in danger because you continue to live off of your never-ending supply of soft-serve fear cream cones. Ever wonder why your ability to think straight when you are in the midst of an emotionally driven stress fest is impacted? Now you know. Your primitive brain is doing all the thinking. It's trying to protect you from a perceived threat that your emotional thought process has created. It overrides the part of the brain that thinks logically. And this is known as an amygdala hijack. The thinking reacting process of the amygdala is hijacking the executive thought process offered by parts of the frontal lobe of the brain. Plug in any scenario where we allow our fearful thoughts to take the wheel. This is the enemy piece of the fear-frenemy relationship we have. And I've discovered with myself that fear was reigning supreme in my mind, both consciously and subconsciously, for decades, 3 or 4 decades. Fear still lurks around my brain regularly, but instead of being an invasive weed that has all but engulfed my thought patterns, it's now more of a regular weed that pops up and I just need to pluck it out before more sprout up. So realistically, we cannot eliminate fear from our thinking. We need it to survive for one thing, and we are human for another thing with complex thoughts, feelings, emotions, perceptions. Fear is going to be a regular tenant living rent-free in our brains. However, think Boston accent, and I grew up in Massachusetts, so I have the right to pull that out when I so choose. However, we can manage it better. And when we develop ways to manage it more effectively, we reduce the number of amygdala hijacks that happen and reduce the number of times a day that the HPA axis is activated, which in turn reduces the number of times cortisol, adrenaline, and norepinephrine are released into our bodies, which if you listen to episode 2, you would know that living in chronic stress, fight or flight, sympathetic nervous system state can and will eventually suppress your immune system, opening you up for inflammation and disease. So let's avoid going down that unpleasant and potentially life-shortening path, shall we? And learn a few hacks to help manage fear the frenemy and shut down that endless supply of the soft serve fear cream flavor called I am the victim to my self-limiting and self-sabotaging fearful thoughts that prevent me from living my best life. First and foremost, I cannot express this enough. We need to gain control back of our minds. Take the control away from fear as often as we can. Generally speaking, it's not been my experience that this can be done spontaneously, and voila, your thought process is free from irrational fear thoughts forever. It's not about eliminating fear. We need this primal evolutionary response to survive. What it is about is reducing self-generated, emotionally driven fear thinking, which causes us to overthink situations, fret about situations, imagine worst-case scenarios about situations, limit our potential because we are afraid of failure or being judged, and do things or not do things that decrease the joy in our lives solely because of fear. I could go on and on, but I think you get the picture. So how do we gain some control back? We gain control back by learning techniques to quiet our minds. That's step one. When we quiet our minds, we can begin to observe our thoughts and responses to things. Quieting the mind can be very hard and very challenging because of the 24/7 digital world we have grown accustomed to. Our brains are receiving constant, never-ending stimulation from a variety of electronic sources and hectic life schedules. Learning how to quiet the mind is building a habit that could lengthen your lifespan and improve your health and well-being on so many levels. And there are so many ways to quiet our minds, and today I'm going to share a few. So find a place where you can sit quietly without your phone, without your tablet, your laptop, etc. Just you and your mind. And baby, if you can go outside, I strongly recommend it because the sounds of nature have a calming effect on the brain. And this is a researched fact. You can learn more about this in episode 9. Even better would be to sit where you can put your bare feet in the grass. This is a very calming and grounding experience. When you put your bare feet in the grass, your body absorbs free ions from the ground, which act as antioxidants in the body, which enhances our immune system and helps our minds feel positive thoughts. And when our minds think positive thoughts, our brains release the healthy good stuff, the chemicals that promote wellness and well-being. I call this DOSE, D-O-S-E, an acronym for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, D-O-S-E. And we want to be giving ourselves a dose frequently throughout the day. This keeps us primarily in the parasympathetic nervous system state of our autonomic nervous system, the rest and digest, the rest and restore. Don't you want to be in rest and restore more than fight or flight? And if you are living in a situation where you cannot go outside, try listening to nature sounds. There's so many great ones you can find on YouTube and Instagram. And in episode 9, we talk about a number of research studies done that demonstrated that even listening to the sounds of nature through your phone or computer can quiet your mind and transition you to rest and restore, thus reducing your stress levels. So once you are seated or laying down or standing there with your feet in the grass, once you get comfortable, close your eyes and focus on listening to and feeling your breathing. Inhale slowly through your nose, drawing your breath from your diaphragm. Place your hands on your lower abdomen, because when you do that, you can literally feel the rise and fall of your body as you breathe. And I find when I'm doing deep breathing and I have my hands on my abdomen, it even helps me stay more focused on the breathing and it keeps my hands busy. Exhale slowly through your mouth, and your thoughts will most likely be racing through your mind, and that's okay. Let them race. Let them go. Let them fire away. Right now, we are building the habit of slowing down your breathing and learning to listen to and observe your breath. I'd start with 5 to 10 minutes a day. And if you can do more, good for you. That's fabulous. My typical meditation is usually 20 to 30 minutes a day. As your brain tries to do its thing and compete against your desire, your newly formed desire to slow everything down, let the thoughts come. And let the thoughts go. And as you get into the habit of doing this every day, start to notice patterns in your thoughts. Are they all over the map? Are they mostly about work or your partner's annoying habits or financial worries or about a chronic illness you have or about the war zone you live in? See, what we are doing is not a quick fix that will happen immediately. Voila. It's not going to happen day one. What we are doing is learning to sift through the thought spaghetti bowl in our minds so we can start to notice the predominant subjects that drive our fearful thinking. Be forewarned, this is not the equivalent of, let's say, a drive-through meal scenario. So this isn't like going through a McDonald's or a Burger King or something similar, where you get your meal quickly. This is a process that takes time to build, and as you build it, you will notice subtle improvements in your well-being. But in a world where we expect things to happen immediately, this is not going to be one of them. So you need to ground your thoughts in that, and you may have to frequently remind yourself that this is a long game, and you are worth it. So as you begin to figure out the most prevalent thought patterns, this gives you important information. It gives you the main sources of where your fear manifests itself and hijacks your amygdala, setting off fight or flight. It is critical to write these things down. This will form the basis of you engaging in another thought process to help you better manage these main sources. When I began to build this habit, I discovered that a high amount of my thoughts were related to work. Even though I had worked hard in the last decade to not be a workaholic, working long hours, etc., my mind was still constantly replaying scenes, planning projects, rehearsing how I would handle various situations or upcoming meetings, imagining worst-case scenario encounters with colleagues, and fear of failing and being fired, etc. It was a constant chatter. Over many years, I had programmed my subconscious mind to let work fear live rent-free in a multi-million dollar oceanfront condo in my brain. This was not a good thing. It meant that my mind was constantly feeling work stress, even though I thought I was relaxing and at rest. And once you discover what the predominant fear thoughts are in your mind, the next step is to accept them for what they are and not judge yourself. We want to move our judgment of our thought process from negative zone to neutral zone. The first step in doing this is to accept them as is. When we meet these thoughts where they are and don't set expectations or more damagingly beat ourselves up for thinking them, we start to neutralize them. And when we neutralize them, they become a thing for us to pause and examine and ponder. Let's use the example of fear predominantly showing up as you constantly being concerned about how your social group evaluates you. So when you're getting ready to go out and you're changing your outfit 50 million times, or you decide not to wear something because you'll be afraid you will be judged or you'll be mocked, or you're zeroing in on the fact that you're a little overweight and will the social group make hurtful comments or talk shit about you behind your back, or maybe you're shy and you always feel fearful that people will think you're not friendly. Or maybe your life is like a little cray-cray right now, or maybe it's a lot cray-cray, and you're feeling like your social group members all have their shit together, perfectly tied up with a beautiful silk bow. So, step one, acknowledge and articulate the fear without judgment. Neutralize it. So you would say in this situation to yourself something along this line. You would speak to the fear, and you would say, I acknowledge the fear that I am afraid that people will judge me. It's not bad. It's not good. It's a fear thought. Everyone on the planet has fear thoughts. It's normal to experience fear thoughts. Step two, accept the fear. It's a real thing for you, so accept it without judgment. You'd think something or you would speak to it this way. I accept that I struggle with fear. That's okay. And I'm okay. And I'm proud of myself for identifying the fear and not judging myself. Step three, talk to the fear. Talk it through with yourself. Have a conversation with it. Might go something like this. What do I think will happen when I'm with my social group? And this could be friends or neighbors or work gathering or a church function. What do I think will happen when I show up? I think some of them might be secretly judging me. They might be judging my body, my clothes, maybe everything. Okay, maybe some of them will be secretly judging me. Maybe they will even talk about me behind my back. And this makes me feel self-conscious before I even step out of the house. And I'm starting to already feel down on myself and maybe I should just stay home. So, okay, observe what your mind is doing here. Fear, the frenemy, is hijacking your thought process and causing you to maybe forego what would most likely be a fun, uplifting experience, or you might just go out still, but in a low energy vibration state. And when we show up as low vibrating energy, people pick up on this and they can and do react to it. This happens a lot in social circles, and our fears are at the root of it. How many times have you observed a friend or a social acquaintance who is exuding negative vibes regularly? Eventually, if the person doesn't sort of change up their thought pattern and show up vibrating at a higher level of more positive energy, we start to feel drained by the energy vampire vibes they are putting out there. So we need to notice if we are frequently showing up with low energy vibe and acknowledge it without judgment and meet it as is and examine why we are feeling low. We need to talk to the fear. Something like this. Okay, I'm feeling down. What is coming to my mind when I examine why I'm feeling this down? Maybe it's that I think my friends have made better choices around careers than I have. Or I'm the only single one in a pack of couples, or so many other things. Remember, write this down so you can further examine it and continue to break it down. Being single in a pack of couples could eventually be broken down to, hey, I'm still figuring out me and my shit. I am not in the right frame of mind, body, and soul to truly be in a relationship right now, and that's okay. It's actually brilliant that I recognize this about myself. Yay me! There is a logical and well-being-based reason why I am single, and I should not feel less than because of this. And I could even explain how I'm feeling to my posse of couple friends. Imagine that. Imagine that. My guess is if these are really truly friends, they will be inspired by your courage to be vulnerable and share what we just went through, and that they would go out of their way to affirm how much they love you single or not single. They just love you. Step four, manage the fear. This is the hardest step because our minds are very powerful in pushing back on new thought processes. You drop in a new program to the brain and it's like rejection. So be ready and push right the F back. You might say to yourself, the goal of tonight is socializing. Socializing means having fun, relaxing, and enjoying people. I am worthy of enjoyment. I will not let fear hold me back from experiencing joy and friendship by allowing it to feed me lies, telling me I'm too fat or I'm too thin or my outfit sucks or my hairstyle is outdated. I am going to a social function to socialize and enjoy myself. If people there are secretly judging me, why the hell exactly do I care about this? How I feel about myself comes from within, not from the opinions of people who are not me. I have the right to wear what I want, style my hair the way I want, wear my makeup the way I want, and if others don't like it, I'm okay with it because I don't let the opinions of others rule my life. And I don't always like what other people are wearing or how they look, but I look beyond that and focus on enjoying the human, not what the human looks like or what the human is dressed in. And people will be more attracted to my confidence in myself versus me feeling all uncomfortable about how I look. Who am I more attracted to? The person who is enjoyable to talk to and get to know, or the person who is preoccupied with how they look? And if it turns out that the crowd I am with tonight is a snotty, stuck-up, cliquey group of emotionally unhealthy humans, I can leave and not socialize with them again. I actually feel bad for people whose main way of socializing is talking shit about everybody else. This signals to me that these people are not mentally healthy. They are hurt on the inside, so gossiping about others and talking smack about people makes them think they feel better, when in fact, it only increases the emotional grime that is coating their immune systems and brains, because hurt people hurt people. I do not need people who vibrate at such a low energy frequency in my life. End of quote. End of discussion with your fear. Now, this discussion is a lot easier said than done or believed by your brain, but it is the gateway to having more control of your thoughts and facing the psychological fear by talking with it and talking through it rationally. So have these kinds of conversations with yourself. This puts you in the driver's seat of managing your fear. Step five, continue noticing when your mind is operating in this fear pattern of thinking. And when this happens, go back and repeat steps 1 through 4. The more you get into the habit of meeting your fear in a neutral way, acknowledging it, accepting it where it is, as it is, without judgment, and then talking to it, talking through and identifying the irrational things it is telling you, and then recasting them into a rational thought process, you will cause this fear to no longer be an invasive weed that has engulfed your brain. It will be a regular weed that simply needs to be plucked out because you have trained yourself to manage your fears. Okay, so we've talked about the value and importance of quieting your mind so you can begin to observe and identify which flavor of fear is most predominantly controlling your joy and happiness. Another approach to learning how to manage the fear is to write it down. Write down the fear. Articulate it very clearly. And yes, this takes effort. This takes you getting a piece of paper or going to your computer and writing it down, but it's worth it. So, for example, I am afraid of speaking up at meetings because I am early career and everyone else in my group are very experienced colleagues. I am afraid they will judge me or be condescending towards me. That will make me feel like an outsider and that they perceive me as a little pup that is cute but does not add value to the dialogue. That is a very well articulated outline of a fear you may be thinking. Then write down the word why. Then start writing down everything that comes into your head about what exactly you are afraid will happen. It's cathartic to write things down. But everyone's like, I don't want to pick up a pen. Oh, I don't want to go to my computer. Do it. For example, you could write down, people will snicker and laugh. My boss will cut me off mid-sentence. Someone will say that my idea is stupid or that my idea will never work or I'll be ignored. And for each of these things you write down, ask these questions and write down the answers. How many times in the last 6 months have I spoken up at a meeting and somebody snickered? How many times in the last 6 months has someone else spoken up and I snickered? Probably 0. How many times in the last 6 months has my boss cut me off mid-sentence in a rude way in a meeting? How many times in the last 6 months has someone said my idea was stupid or would never work? And so on. And then answer the questions. You may see that none of these things happened in the last 6 months, signaling to you that it is safe for you to speak up. It's a healthy environment, and your fear thoughts are making you look through a false lens about how your colleagues will behave. Your fear can be put in check, i.e., you can pull out that fear weed from your brain's programming. You can also tell your fear, talk to it, that, listen up, early career people. Early career employees have experience working with new technologies and may have a fresh take on things. And the goal of a work meeting is to come up with the best solutions, and they can come from anywhere and anyone. So do not let the fear of being less experienced hold you back. Alternatively, you might answer yes to some of these questions. There are work environments where people do snicker and people do say someone's idea is stupid or it won't work. And this is where playing this back through the lens of rationality can be really helpful. And you might say something like this to your fear. People who snicker at other people or say someone's idea is stupid have low or underdeveloped emotional intelligence. They simply do. Instead of reacting to this by feeling bad about myself, I will see this for what it truly is. This person does not have maturity in interacting with people. And I will change how I view this situation from me feeling stupid to me neutrally acknowledging to myself that I am operating at a higher energy vibration and a more mature communication pattern than that person is. I cannot control how they behave, but I can certainly damn well control how I will react and respond. So now that you have rationally determined that it's not about you, it's about them and their underdeveloped ability to communicate effectively and respectfully, you can release the feeling stupid and small reaction and bring on the feeling that you are operating at a much higher communication frequency than your colleagues. And there are a number of ways you can handle it. One way to counteract a person who says your idea is stupid is to look them right in the eye and say, that feedback's not helpful. Can you explain why you think my idea won't work? Or you can speak with your boss after the meeting about the person. And it's a manager's job to coach people like that. So journaling and boiling the fear down so you can rationally determine how you will manage it can help you avoid many days where you are showing up afraid to share your ideas and contribute to the discussion. So a few final thoughts about quieting your mind and sifting through your thoughts to identify what subjects predominantly activate your emotional fear response. So in addition to helping you pull out the invasive fear weeds and shut down the soft serve ice cream machine in your mind that's been serving up many flavors of fear for far too long, quieting your mind transitions your body from the sympathetic fight or flight nervous system to the parasympathetic rest and restore to the parasympathetic nervous system. And this is imperative. This is the system in which your body executes many healing, detoxifying, and well-being processes. It is essential to put yourself in this state as much as you possibly can. It will have lasting effects on your health and longevity. Try to work up to 20 minutes a day of simply sitting quietly, observing your breathing, listening to relaxing music or nature sounds, getting outside if you can, grounding your feet into the earth, and letting thoughts come and letting thoughts go. Your brain will reward you by working with you to identify, neutralize, and manage fearful thinking, putting you in the driver's seat and not fear. Physiologically, this will cause your brain to regularly release the joy dose that I talked about earlier, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins, and not the fear chemicals, cortisol, adrenaline, and norepinephrine. Dr. Bruce Lipton, one of my absolute favorite people to listen to, is an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirit. He's also a stem cell biologist and the author of The Biology of Belief, and in my opinion, a truly, truly amazing human being. And he said, and I quote, if I take the chemicals released by the brain in love, so brain in love, and put it into a plastic dish with cells, the cells grow beautifully. I say, okay, wait, what about the chemicals that come out of a brain of someone in fear? I take those chemicals and put that in the culture dish, the cells stop growing. When you are in growth, you are open to the world and you say, come on, bring it on. But when fear or something else comes in there and you close it down, and the chemistry of fear is what shuts down the cells. Fear kills. It's not a mystery. It's simple. The mind is an interpretation of the world. It causes the brain to release chemistry that matches the interpretation to coordinate 50 trillion cells to live in that world. It's your emotions. It's your perceptions. It's your beliefs. These are the sources of the chemicals that end up controlling the genes. And this is a new science. It's called epigenetics. End quote. Simply said, fear not only messes with your happiness and joy and living your best life, it also messes with your body. It messes with your immune system. It messes with your health. It messes with your well-being. It messes with your very life. Another way to think about it is to imagine your joy, your happiness, your purpose, your passions, contentment, peace, self-love, etc., as a silhouette of beautiful light that fills your entire body. It's an iridescent, glowing, soft, ethereal light that is reflected throughout your body in the shape of your body. And when emotionally driven fear thoughts take over, they are like two disgusting, dirty, gnarly hands that appear in your brain that begin to roll up that beautiful silhouette like a window shade. The light disappears, starting at the bottom of your body and moving up as fear slowly reels in that beautiful silhouette of light until it all but disappears, all rolled up and tucked back into your subconscious. And when this happens, I want you to picture another set of beautiful, soft, loving hands appearing in your brain that gently but firmly grasp the hands of fear and remove them from your rolled up silhouette. And then unfurl your silhouette of beautiful light so the joy, happiness, purpose, passions, contentment, peace, self-love, and so on spread back into your entire being, leaving fear the frenemy powerless to rob you of living your best life.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Why Am I So Effing Stressed podcast. Imagine how different the world would be if people were less reactive and more relaxed. Kindly leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform so we can continue helping people learn about stress and how to more effectively manage it. You can connect with Anne-Marie via Instagram at StressLessAMB or by email at amb@StressLessAMB.com.